Hi, I'm Brittany Ashley, your host of Breaking Norms, Building Dreams, your guide through this transformative journey in both business and life. This is your place crafted for dreamers, doers, or anyone who has been told they can't. Get ready as we challenge those narratives together. You're tuning in live to the United Public Radio Network, airing on 105.3 and 107.7 FM in New Orleans. We are streaming on all the popular platforms every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join me for a candid and thought-provoking conversation celebrating your unique journey because you are worth it. Hello, everyone. We have an exciting show, not just two today, but three of us are coming on. Breaking Norms, Building Dreams. I'm your host, Brittany Ashley, and we are broadcasting live on United Public Radio Network and UFO Paranormal Radio Network at 105.3 and 107.7 FM in New Orleans. Get ready to escape the routine and join us for the next hour as we break norms and build dreams. I'm so excited to both have you guys on the show. Everyone knows Nadine, but no one knows who Carolyn is. So I'm so excited to dig in deep because today's all about imposter syndrome and self-doubt. Let's just do a quick little introduction, Nadine, on who you are. Nadine is an international and certified coach helping ambitious moms get their mojo back. The thing that they can't stop thinking about. When Nadine's not a powering up moms, she is passionate with other areas and also being at home with her family in Vancouver, Canada. Thank you, Nadine, for coming on the show again.
Yay, it's now having me.
number five now for you to come back.
I thought it was number three, but I see we're having fun, so we're kind of losing track.
Yes, yes. And then we have the lovely Caroline. Thank you for coming on the show today. I'm so excited to have you as well.
I'm glad to be here.
Caroline is the co-founder and managing partner of Imposter Institute, which I actually took my imposter syndrome coaching course with, not just one, but two. It's been so great. So we'll dig in that a little bit deeper today as well to educate other listeners on if they want to kind of follow the suit of an imposter syndrome coach practitioner. You can educate everybody on all of that, Caroline, because I can ask you more questions, but I'm so excited to have you here and also talk about Dr. Valerie Young, because I sometimes promote her a little bit on the show and everyone's like, who's that? So I know you guys work closely together. I'm like looking at all, because it's like a huge bio. I'm like, how about let's just throw it to you?
Yeah.
Who
are you? What are you doing here? Well, I am a co-founder of Imposter Syndrome Institute. Yeah. And Dr. Valerie Young and I have known each other for, I don't know, almost 15 years. And she is the global thought leader on the topic of Imposter Syndrome Institute. And so we co-founded Imposter Syndrome Institute so that we could take all that brilliance packaged up in that brain of hers, having specialized on this topic for 40 some years. And my role, having been in, you know, business strategy for entrepreneurs for two decades. I'm here and managing partner of Imposter Syndrome Institute so that we can really scale her brilliant solutions around imposter syndrome so more people can do the stop holding themselves back. So
yeah. Well, thank you. I'm so excited to have you on the show. As Nadine has already know that when I went on my whole venture of becoming a certified business coach, one of the topics that we had to really kind of dig into, well, not specifically, but I did, was imposter syndrome. And I did a whole huge paper. And one of the questions was, where do you want to go with your coaching journey? And I just think like imposter syndrome does affect a lot of people. As you know, it doesn't discriminate. And I am just so passionate to educate and really follow that journey as well. So I'm so excited for you to be here and talk more about the program, the course, all the things.
All right. Great. Yeah.
Nadine, maybe we can just go pick your brain on your thoughts on imposter syndrome, and then we can kind of go around the room. All the listeners listening today, this is our first time doing like a three conversation, and usually we have like just the two of us, so we're just going to kind of wing it and see how it goes.
Yeah, I'm like super excited to learn more about it, Carolyn, from your like all the things that you're up to and the courses that you're offering as well. I've personally come across imposter syndrome quite a couple of years ago too, and it's part of my regular coaching with moms as well, especially when they've been home for a bit, or you know, and then re-entering the workforce, or they're venturing into something new and like following that, you know, that giddiness, like, oh yeah, what if there's more, what if I do this, and kind of defy expectations and what they think they should be doing, but kind of, you know, leaning into that outside that comfort zone a bit more. And automatically it's like, oh, but hang on, maybe I should be staying back here, or what if I, you know, what would others be thinking if I do this? So it's coming off up quite pretty often when I'm talking with my clients, but also for myself, it's been a constant, I don't want to say companion, that's the word that just came to my head, because I don't, it's not something that I necessarily invite along on my journey. But just before we came on air, I just shared that obviously I'm living in Canada now, but this is my sixth country. I've been living in lots of different countries before and done lots of different roles. Some of them, most of them I was actually really, really passionate about, but I didn't necessarily always have the formal training when I started off. There was always something like learning on the job, or like taking the training in parallel to doing those jobs. So I was a leader in an international software company. I would not call myself a techie person. I was a host on a massive sailing boat just off the Spanish island. I've started my first business here in Canada in the first year I've immigrated. There was plenty of opportunity for self-doubt to set in, and anxiety and imposter syndrome, plenty of opportunity to learn for myself from that, and to overcome those limiting thoughts and beliefs, and the self-doubt when that set in. And one of the things that I came across earlier on was, we'll share about resources later. I know, Carolyn, you probably have lots as well, so we can share in there too. But yeah, for me, my journey with imposter syndrome, I kind of feel like it's always going to be there. I don't think that's necessarily, at least for me, something I can get rid of completely. But it's something that occasionally shows up. And then I'm like, depending on where I'm at, it's like, oh, just go away. I don't have time for you. Just, you
know. It's not practical right now.
Get away. Or I'm a bit more, you know, I have to dig a bit deeper. And I know we're probably going to go into some strategies later on as well on how to do that, how I'm overcoming it. And I'd love to hear your strategies later too. But I always think, you know, there's something you can do about it. It's not something I necessarily myself want to wallow in. Mm-hmm. There's always like, okay, no, get out of here. I don't want to waste time on this, because I've got stuff to do. I want the world to run better. I want to help moms. And by being in that type of mindset for too long, it doesn't serve me nor my clients and the people around me in my community. So that's my stint and experience with imposter syndrome and self-doubt.
I love hearing that. And, you know, what strikes me, Nadine, when I hear you talk about your background and all the countries you've lived in and all the different things, I mean, you've kept going. I mean, there is a difference between low self-esteem, self-doubt, and imposter syndrome. So, Brittany, what do you think about, should we just do a quick little definition, or the differences, like the kind of the distinctions between those?
Yes, I was actually going to say, maybe we should define what imposter syndrome is, because mm-hmm. not very many people might know what that is, and self-doubt and all that. And also, what is coaching and what is not coaching? I think we should maybe we should have opened up with that a little bit. But you know what? Let's do it now.
Let's do it. Well, who wants to define coaching and who wants to define imposter syndrome? and then I'll go into distinctions.
Yeah. So overall coaching, just anyone listening, is just really looking into the future, going to the present, versus like if you're going to a counselor, they're going to be looking a little bit more, digging a little bit deeper in the roots of the causes and asking more curious questions in the past that may be rooted into the present. Versus when you're working with a life coach or business coach, we're really kind of going forward with you towards your goals and setting measurable goals to really make sure that those are actionable for you. Mm-hmm. And we can't diagnose or anything like that as a coach. That's really like a therapist and or like counselors, right? That they can actually do that. We are not certified by any means to do any of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great definition of coaching. And actually, I haven't even, for as long as I've been in the coaching world, over 20 mm-hmm. years, I've never really heard it described that way, which I love. So
yeah, that's
one of the beauties of you, Brittany. So, you know, imposter syndrome is a belief shared by millions of people around the world, both, you know, those who identify as male, those who identify as female, that they're not as talented or intelligent or capable or qualified as everybody else thinks they are. And the mm-hmm. fascinating thing about imposter syndrome is these feelings exist despite evidence of success and accomplishments, the degree, the diploma, the awards, the, you know, very practically the LinkedIn recommendations and the promotions and the raises. Like those are very practical things, but you know, there's also a paradox of success and imposter syndrome because, and this is Nadine goes back to you. You're a great example of you just keep moving and changing what you're doing and moving and changing what you're doing. And as you continue to ascend that ladder of success, some people have the impression that that should just go away. Those feelings of self-doubt should go away. But oftentimes that's when they flare up the most because you don't have it all figured out. You know, so, but there's also a distinction that I want to add. You know, self-doubt is normal for all of us. Like mm-hmm. I have my bouts with self-doubt, but it doesn't mean it's imposter syndrome. So if I take defining imposter syndrome just one step further, it has three components. And the first is this false belief that you somehow managed to fool other people into thinking you're more talented or intelligent or competent or capable than you really are. So that's one component. A second component is the belief exists despite this evidence of your past accomplishments. We touched on that. And that those two first two result in the third component, which is you have a fear of being found out. So that's mm-hmm. where that the imposterism shows up. And it's those three components that really help people to define, is this what I'm going through or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think like when I joined the course too, I was always kind of like, I thought I knew what imposter syndrome was because I did all the research, all the things, but then it was so nice just to kind of come in at it thinking that I knew everything. But then I learned so much more when I came into the course with Dr. Valerie Young and you, that it would kind of open my mind a little bit more. And also too, it was like, because I spent all this money becoming a certified coach, business coach, and all these things. And then I was like, let's go get another course. So I'm like the expert. Like I have to get all of the things together. Like I have my BBA, marketing communications. I have to do all these extra educational pieces because I feel like I need to have these before I can move forward. And it was funny. I remember Dr. Valerie Young making a comment about the expert. I was like, oh, that's me. Because I never I was so excited to be a part of Imposter Syndrome Institute without knowing that I actually was struggling with my own imposter syndrome because it was holding myself back because I was trying to be a coach, but I was like, oh, I'm not good enough. I'm like having this huge fear that I couldn't get my clients to that expectation of what I wanted. Mm-hmm. So like sitting there in the program, I remember being like, oh,
yeah. And for listeners, one of the things that Dr. Young, what's really notable about her work is that she was the first to make the connection between imposter syndrome and people's distorted definition of what competence is. And mm-hmm. so she started to observe that we have collective misdefined definitions of competence, and there are five of them. We colloquially they're referred to as the five types of imposter syndrome. And so, Brittany, what you were referring to one of those five types, which is, I'm the expert. I need to know everything. Like, I've got to, or I'm not competent. If I don't know everything, I'm not competent. But there are other people who are perfectionists. You know, if I don't do everything perfectly, I'm not competent. One mistake is that just dinged my competence level. And there are others, but that I just wanted to add a little color to your expert comment there.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah. There's the expert, the perfectionist. I resonate a lot with a perfectionist. I'm a recovering perfectionist, I like to say. But like too, like when I mess up with Nadine's like introduction, when we just started, I'm like, oh, though, and then I just start spiraling a little bit. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm not competent to be here. And then I start like, and then it's like, you have to have the little mind shift of like, okay, you mess up, who cares? Keep going. Mm-hmm. Take yourself back, let's go.
Right. This is something you've learned by becoming an imposter syndrome informed coach too, like recognizing that we're going to have normal moments of messing up for sure.
Yes.
And it's like that, it just makes you human as well, right? It's like, it's normal. Everyone has like the self-doubt. We just heard again, it's like, it doesn't discriminate. Everyone has it. It just seems that sometimes we feel we're the only ones having it, right?
Yeah.
Or mm-hmm. that also specifically women tend to have it, even though, you know, men have imposter syndrome just as much, but they might not be talking about it because of other negative feelings around it, right? It's like stigma or shame or those types of things, like, and I'm not supposed to feel those types of things. So it doesn't show up. But I think, wasn't it Albert Einstein who famously had imposter syndrome too? I think he was mentioned in some of his letters and communication that he was suffering from it too. And it's like, you know, it shows even like to what you said, what you talked about earlier, that it's the higher you get in your accomplishments, the more it can actually show up as well.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It's funny you bring up Einstein, or Einstein, as you say, because you have, you're German,
yeah.
right?
Oh, yeah, it's like Einstein. Albert Einstein.
is that imposter phenomenon is actually the term that was first co-coined by two psychologists back in 1978. And so kind of, you know, long after Einstein may have expressed this, but they were the first to define it, to coin it as that feeling. Now, it's called imposter syndrome these days. It just kind of evolved into imposter syndrome in popular culture, despite the fact that it's not a diagnosable disorder or on the DSM. You know, it's not a, what a therapist would consider a, you know, a syndrome. But a syndrome is also a series of, you know, a collection of experiences and commonalities that can make something a syndrome. So the name, it can be a little misleading depending on how literal you are in the definition of words. But, you know, the fact that Einstein had alluded to something like that, it just, it hadn't been named until decades after he probably experienced it. Yeah. So.
And I do know he suffered from dyslexia, which I also have dyslexia. And so like, I think it resonates a lot. I think we kind of talked about this in the program a little bit, those with learning disabilities. Yes, we were very resilient to move forward past certain areas. However, it kind of shows up a little bit more for us sometimes because it could be kind of, because I grew up in a, I would say it was very hard growing up with dyslexia in school because you're kind of labeled as dumb or stupid, or you were not good enough to be there. So it's kind of like you're always trying to prove that you're good enough to be there. And that's probably why I kind of venture into like the expert role of feeling like I need to get all these degrees or certifications, because I feel like I need to have this behind my belt before I say, yes, I'm a coach, or yes, I know my marketing, kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just processing.
Mm-hmm. But with that, maybe we can talk on some common signs and symptoms of imposter syndrome. Just anybody kind of listening, maybe Caroline, you can kind of dig in a little bit deeper there. So if anybody's listening, they can kind of like, oh, these are common signs that are kind of showing up for me as well, that they can kind of connect with.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. You know, we talked about the expert and the perfectionist. The expert, you know, if you feel like you need to know everything before you'll raise your hand in a meeting and share an idea, that might be a symptom. It might be a behavior. Mm-hmm. But what happens is a lot of people fly, they're these coping and protecting mechanisms that we use when we're trying to deal with this, you know, this fear of being found out and deal with our imposter syndrome. And they're at least seven, but three of them are incredibly common. And one is procrastination. And Nadine, it'll be interesting to see how this lines up with, you know, what you notice, but procrastination. So let's just say, and I want to say this very quickly. I know that, you know, some listeners might be experiencing imposter syndrome personally, directly in their role as, you know, this is something that typically applies to achievement arenas, work, school, business, career. So someone might be listening and saying, yeah, I absolutely can identify this. And the other thing I want to mention is we don't recommend diagnosing people. So, you know, I wouldn't, if I'm in a conversation with my neighbor, for example, who is a managing partner at a large, you know, management consulting firm, if she says something, I probably wouldn't say, oh, that's imposter syndrome you have. So we're more about helping people self-identify and helping coaches, the people who support people with experience, helping them, and this is what Brittany's experienced with us, helping them find a way to, in a direction to take the conversation and have tools to deal with it. So I'm just, the examples I'm using here today are not any kind of diagnosing you. It's just saying, here's some behaviors you might notice. So if you're procrastinating, it might be like Brittany, in your case, you say you're an expert. Mm-hmm. If you procrastinate, it might be because you're like, oof, I don't really want to put out this report because I don't know everything and I don't want to be judged. And if I don't have, if I'm not competent enough to know everything, then I'm going to put off writing this report or I'm going to put off doing this thing. So procrastination is a way that you might cope with those feelings of being that imposter type.
I'm like going through that right now as you're saying, I'm like creating an SO, I'm supposed to be presenting in front of like a whole bunch of different agency owners, all of these like people who want to grow agencies. And I've been asked to come in and talk about SOPs. And I know SOPs. I know what to do. I know all the things and ins outs of all the things because I can get thrown into a conversation and guide you. But now they want me to come present. I was like, and it's supposed to be on Wednesday. I'm like, I haven't put a PowerPoint together. I'm like procrastinating because I'm like, maybe they'll forget about me. Mm-hmm. And I'll have to do it.
Yeah. Let's see how that works out for you with them hoping to forget them.
Yeah.
But then the other thing is that I am a perfectionist and I don't want to go there without being prepared and over prepare myself. It's like I don't know. I'm like a mix.
It's actually a perfect example because this is like the exact opposite of procrastination, right? Some people behave by overworking and over preparing because they don't want to be perceived as, you know, not as capable or less capable than they really are. So they put in more effort than necessary and that can lead to burnout. So, you know, you're looking at two opposite ends of the spectrum there, which is quite interesting. Nadine, what do you notice with your clients? I'm curious.
It's like, first of all, it's super, super interesting. I know these kind of terms, they show up pretty often with my clients as well, but I've never heard them in the connection with imposter syndrome. So that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Yes, to like the procrastination part, could come up, but it's mainly the perfectionism that comes through and people pleasing. So I wonder if one of those things that you have on imposter syndrome is also shows up as people pleasing. Usually as mothers, it's not kind of we're societally like through society trains, like we're taking care of everyone else's needs 24/7. It's just everyone else all the time. And so it's difficult to look out for our own well-being and what we as moms want, or as women with our own goals and our own identity. And so that often shows up in like not really going for what you want and putting everyone else's first. And then the overcompensating for maybe being home and caring for your children for a year or two, or maybe longer, depending how long maybe you've been out of the workforce, or, you know, it's like, oh, you have to prove yourself. It has to be right. What if, you know, what will they think of me if I go into that interview that I, you know, really like, but then, you know, it has to be perfect. And this whole like overworking, I mean, it's difficult anyways, like just raising kids is a full-time job. Having a full-time job is a full-time job. Trying to combine the two has its own challenges that show up. But, you know, it's constantly this battle of trying to do 180% for everyone. And you're coming out nowhere near sane at the end of it. And so the perfectionism is huge, and trying to make it right by everyone and not disappointing anyone. It's like when you do have to leave at 3 o'clock because you need to pick up your kids from daycare, or, you know, they're sick in the middle of the day and you need to leave because you're the default parent, you know, all these types of things. So you're like, you know, then logging on in the evening and working for 3-4 hours until midnight and da-di-da. So that definitely shows up quite a bit. And it's definitely not healthy. Obviously, you know, in your mindset and everything that goes on, but it then often shows up in physical ways as well, where you're just like totally exhausted to the time where it's like there's no energy left at all.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, you know, what you just described, the perfectionism, and not just at work, but also with the kids, with other parts of your life, that's one of the 5 imposter types that's called the superhuman. So, you know, this is where it's the perfectionist on steroids. It's having to be perfect in every part of your life. So if you think about the proverbial superwoman, who you're describing, is you have to be perfect at work and in your work, but you also have to be the perfect partner, the perfect mom. You're the one who hosts all the family gatherings, cooks gourmet meals, like has to maintain a rock hard body. It's like every part of your life. So that is that definition of competence, the distorted definition of competence that needs to change. How can you redefine what competence really is if that's how you view success in your life?
Yeah, it's always the doing, isn't it? It's always more doing.
It's never less, is it?
No, it's so, and it's unsustainable. It's just, it's toxic, really. Mm-hmm. It's like sometimes I know there used to be all these phrases out, and you see it on social media. Oh, see, she's like a superhuman or super mom. But actually it's like, you know, you don't see behind the scenes, you don't know what's going on. And just like by labeling someone that super mom or superhuman, it can be creating quite a toxic type of expectations as well, because then you're like comparing yourself. Oh, well, she's doing all these things, and you never quite know what's going on. And then that goes into your own cycle of being more of a perfectionist or that superhuman, right?
It's interesting because what's happened, and Brittany, I'm sure we talked about this during your imposter syndrome informed coach training, but you know, what's happened is there's been like this rebranding of what imposter syndrome is. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, there's so much attention to this topic on social media and books and, you know, podcasts and here we are, TV, like all of that stuff. And there's been a big shift. So imposter syndrome was defined in 1978, is now 2024. So here we are 40 some years later. Mm-hmm. And in more recent years, and this is Dr. Young, my co-founder's observation, is that it's being rebranded as a positive. It's being rebranded as imposter syndrome is your superpower. And she correlates that to when men started entering the conversation and having their words about it. But in this interpretation, imposter feelings are no longer something that undermine our ability to, you know, undermine our ability to accept or internalize our success. Instead, it's a badge of honor. And it's proof of our success. And so there are a lot of high profile people out there who are arguing that it's your superpower. And they say, you know, it's your motivation to work harder and prepare more. Okay, well, you're just describing that's not working for your clients. They might say it's essential to the creative process, or it's a sign you're learning, or it's a way to keep you humble, or, you know, it's like there are all these kind of misinformed reasons for why they say it's your superpower. And at the end of the day, what that does is it really downplays or ignores the impact, the negative, the costs and consequences that imposter syndrome mm-hmm. has on your world when you're like, oh, it's my superpower. But deep down inside, you're overworking, mm-hmm. overpreparing, you're continuing to exhibit these behaviors that are not healthy for you.
No, and it's like, it sounds really toxic, actually. And I would love to, like, I personally, I tend to lead more with coming from a point of love and compassion and self-kindness and mm-hmm. And going with the flow rather than going with, you know, the motivational side, or you just have to work harder, or this is something, you know, negative, or it's working. I was like, why does it have to be difficult? Why do we have to use negative kind of motivation techniques to get us going? Why can't we just switch to something that's a lot more compassionate and and kinder to ourselves? Right? It's like, oh, you couldn't get this done. It was like, maybe you just work harder. Well, you know, what if you see it as a learning opportunity and you'll tweak a few things and then you'll try again? You know, it's like, oh, thank you for sharing that aspect of it. I had no idea, but it doesn't quite resonate with me either, that labeling it as a superpower. It's like, no, it might be a sign of when it shows up, it's like, oh, you know, you're leading out of your comfort zone, or you're stretching yourself and there's something new here, maybe a new situation or whatever. But I think it won't work as a motivational technique for sure. That's not how I want to lead either. It's not in my values.
Yeah.
And I think it's all about what we put out in society as a whole too. So we are always, if you look over in Europe, Nadine, you can probably help shed light on this. But here in the Western community, we're like, work harder, work Monday to Friday. Sometimes on weekends, we'll bring stuff home with you. Like we just are constantly going. And to take that step back, sometimes we feel guilty to take that step back and giving ourselves grace. But I've said this a few times on the show that we as moms or parents or whoever, we have to take a step back and try to give ourselves more grace and not compare so much. And I think we do live in a world of constantly comparing each other, not just, okay, in business as entrepreneurs, but even if you're in a 9-to-5 and you're constantly looking at somebody, oh, they have this role, they have this title. So it's just kind of taking a step back and trying to bring something positive to your mindset. So it's, you're not constantly comparing, but you're trying to maybe elevate who you want to be in the end result, because we're all worthy of accomplishing what we want to accomplish. But when we start going down this compare cycle, we kind of lose sight, I think, a little bit, and then we forget where we want to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to add that to that too, the overworking and over preparing and like just getting yourself to that, it works, because what it does is it gets you the promotions, it gets you the attention, it gets you the kudos, it gets you the raises, but it's not sustainable. Nadine, you said that it's just not sustainable. You know, mm-hmm. one of the things that we really endorse as a first step is just normalizing that this is an experience that a lot of people have. I mean, kind of the standard percent is 70% of people say that they have experienced imposter syndrome or will at some point or another during their career. So, you know, that's one way to go, oh, all right, I'm not the only one. But also just understanding, like, this shows up for a host. There are a lot of different sources that can fuel or feed an imposter experience. And so really understanding what that's from, you know, to your point, Brittany, you're like, we don't want to like veer into therapy because we're coaches, we're future focused. We don't want to veer into therapy, but one source is, you know, family expectations growing up. You know, there are some families that might expect perfect straight A's, and that fuels things later in life, that anything less than perfection is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. So that is competence, you know. So there are some things, but there are all sorts of other things that contribute to feeling and having imposter moments and having an imposter experience. So some of it is the competence gap between women who identify as, or people who identify as women and people who identify as men. You know, it's your confidence is lower in women's confidence is lower in their 20s and 30s, which are, you know, starts to ease up in the 30s and or 40s and 50s. And by 60, women are more confident than men. And they're like, screw it, I don't care anymore. But, you know, when you're in your 20s and 30s, those are career platform building years. So mm-hmm. if your confidence is lower, I mean, it's studies show that in a leaderless group, people choose the more confident leader than the more competent leader. Yet you mm-hmm. see women going out and getting, Brittany, just to your example, going out and getting more designations, more classes, more training, more of this, you know, to feel more competent, when that's not really the case for everybody. So, you know, and there are a lot of societal factors as well. If you are in a room where you don't look or sound like other people in that room, mm-hmm. That could impact this, you know, create a sense of not belonging. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're one of the first or just one of a few or the only person to represent, you know, to rep, you know, that can make you, you know, that can fuel imposter feelings as well. So there are a lot of source, different sources, and it's really helpful to understand, as if you're dealing with it directly, to understand what sources might have contributed to it. And as a coach, if you're coaching someone with imposter syndrome, mm-hmm. maybe to help them figure out what that source is. But that's, you know, that is not therapy. That is just saying, all right, well, you know, that is normalizing it and saying, you know what? No, what? I mean, there are industries, there are entire industries that fuel imposter feelings. Like, mm-hmm. let's just say STEM is one example. If you're in science, tech, engineering, medicine, it's very common, because how can you possibly keep up with everything there is to know in a rapidly changing, you know, fields? And so if you feel like you're always having to like run to catch up, you can feel like an imposter if you can't keep up with everything that's happening. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so there are a lot of different situational, familial, confidence, societal, like there are a lot of things that really contribute to it. So if you're a coach helping your clients understand and kind of go, oh, well, of course I feel like an imposter. It's because of this. That's really, really helpful.
I also, to that point, I actually find that is one of the best way to start tackling this as well, is to get an understanding, right? It's like knowing what's going on. It's like the learning behind it. What we just basically cover is like, what is imposter syndrome? How does it show up? Am I the only one, or are there 70% others in the, you know, in this room feeling maybe similar to this? So it's like normalize it, knowing what's going on, having a label for these types of thoughts or feelings that are going on. And then also starting to really like catch yourself in the moment as well, not necessarily go down a rabbit hole of those types of thoughts, right? It's like, oh, maybe I should have studied harder. Maybe I do need to, you know, reference this other resource in my reports that I've been procrastinating on, but also, hey, it's now taken on 100 pages instead of just 30. And so really catching yourself in the moment to be able to actually intercept the going down that rabbit hole and getting lost in that, because that can get really difficult to get out of that as well. So if you're going at it without a coach, and you're just figuring it out on your own, I think that is something that is that we can practically do or train ourselves to do. And then I also found, like, on the tackling side of it, it's like always like talking about it in the open, seeing, yes, there are 70% of others in this room also feeling the same, right? You're not on by yourself through it. And I find sometimes, like, actually I have people come to me, it's like, I think I'm suffering from imposter syndrome. And it's like, okay, let's unpack what makes you say that. So sometimes people already have that level of knowledge of, you know, what's going on, etc. And they're seeking out support because they can't tackle it by themselves.
Yeah, and it's good to kind of know too that sometimes it you might feel that it is imposter syndrome, but it could link just into anxiety. So try to make sure that it's not just, because I find so many people come to me and it ends up being, oh, it's just anxiety, because I have a lot of anxiety too. And so I'm like, is this showing up as anxiety or is this showing up as imposter syndrome?
Yeah.
Questions to that. And there's also too, because I'm just watching the time, I think it's important to talk about like the misconceptions on imposter syndrome. Because there's a few. The one thing that I still like, and like my mind's like blown still to this one, is that it's showing up for kids at age 6, I believe it was. As young as age 6. And I started doing like a lot of research on this topic because I have two little ones. Mm-hmm. I almost have a 6-year-old. I have a 2-year-old. And it's like, okay, so how does this start showing up for kids so young? Is it because we talked about the whole grade factor, but here in BC, we don't grade anymore. It's actually, we now do it based on proficient. I don't even know. I just think it's really weird because I'm like, now we're setting you up, I feel like, to fail more, because now we took away the grades and now we're giving you this 3-line area, but then when you go to high school then we go back to the grades again.
On that topic, I had no idea it fits in with this, but this morning I shared a short video that the actress Viola Davis shared on Instagram, and it's a campaign call around close the dream gap, and it actually had to do with girls that girls by the age of 5 no longer believe to the same level as boys that they can be presidents, that they can be surgeons, that they can be going to space, those types of things. And then there's a next level to that by the time they're 7. And it's all, you know, the time they go to school, when they're exposed to more of a society by themselves without maybe necessarily parents around as well, or all sorts of other resources. But that seems to be a bit relevant here, when they no longer believe all of a sudden that they can accomplish the dreams that they may have had or their professional ambitions that they set out with earlier on. I wonder where you had, like, Brittany, did you, like, part of the training, the six-year-old?
I just don't have it in front of me. There's a stat. And then I went on this crazy researching piece on this too. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Caroline, if you recall, it was, I can't quite remember where it came from, but I think it was a journal of magazines. I'll put it like in like everybody listening out, like, out where I got it from. There's other misconceptions too. Yes, for children, but it's slowly showing up for age six and up. But the thing mm-hmm. is too, that I think the biggest thing that we have to remember that it doesn't discriminate, because I find that because we are women, we're all in women, different groups. Sometimes I've seen that a lot of people downplay that it doesn't show up for a lot of males, and it does. And I think just kind of talking about that more will help those who are listening, because I feel that males, they don't have as much as a supportive network as maybe we do as women. We're more like all cultivating together in ways, slowly coming together. But I find males, sometimes they end up having, like, even parents, like dad groups. Like, I never see any dad groups online. It's usually for mom groups, which is great. But I do feel for like those single dads or just dads alone, not having those kind of conversations for other dads of spitballing ideas when you're dealing with a crazy two-year-old. Because I know, Nadine, I can like message you on my crazy day.
I think it all plays in with the toxic masculinity as well. And we're not necessarily promoting men live out all their emotions that are not just restricted to maybe frustration and anger and rage. But you know, it's like, how often do you see men cry? How often do you see them purely happy because, you know, when you online see, you know, how they watch their children take their first steps, it's always the mothers, it's always this you know, the woman as the carer. You don't see even on, you know, TV shows or in movies. It's always, or it's usually the woman who's like embracing that, and men are, you know, either they're very or oftentimes they're very contained with their feelings. And I think there's a good dose of maybe guilt or shame, or what does that say about me when I openly, when I openly say maybe I shouldn't be in this position, or it's like I feel like I don't really belong here. And it does show up. Like, I'm coaching fathers as well, and you know, it's, they're usually the ones that do come to me. They are more in tune with their full emotional mm-hmm. brand, and they are not afraid to say, it's like, hey, I'm kind of out of my depth here. how do I tackle this? And mm-hmm. you know, it's, I think there's a bigger thing here of men talking about all their feelings in a constructive way, including mm-hmm. imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Like last year in November, I went to a networking, it's called Uplift. And like the number one thing that everyone kept talking about was imposter syndrome. All the speakers kept saying about imposter syndrome, but I do think that they were kind of mixing the two together for limiting beliefs. But swinging back to why I'm kind of brought up, just kind of shedding lights for males that yes, it does affect mm-hmm. imposter syndrome, because I do have a son. So it's like, how can I educate myself as a mom to a little boy to know, okay, that let's just have that kind of open speaking, safe place, so we can kind of cultivate what their generation is going to look like next. Because the one thing that we were saying at Uplift, it could have been night, because yes, it was all for woman empowerment, everyone come together, let's talk about how we build our businesses. But we could have also extended the platform saying, hey, to any of the male friends. Do you want to come with us and come learn what we've also experienced? And there was only maybe, there was at least 300 women and 5 males that came
out.
Yes. And I think if we maybe extended that little, come on, like it is open to you as well. They can also learn too, what we're experiencing behind the scenes of, like, I know for me, I feel like sometimes I don't like having discover calls with males because I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm not worthy of being on this same platform as you. Cause I know you're coming from tech where I used to come from tech. So it's like that kind of level. Right. So.
Well, I just want to, add something here, you know, with imposter syndrome, a lot of research comes out of academia and they found that Asian American men have the highest rates of imposter syndrome. And some of that is family messaging because Asian families value collectivism and, you know, not bringing shame to your family. So, you know, there are a lot of men at the highest reaches of corporate America running companies who experience imposter syndrome. They can, it's not this just for women thing. And one of the things, a core tenet of our business, Imposter Syndrome Institute, is we want to teach people, we want people to think like what Dr. Young calls a humble realist. Mm-hmm. And a humble realist, so when we talk about their, you know, 70% of people experience imposter syndrome, you know, you start thinking, well, what about these other 30%? Well, some of that 30% are really just what, you know, they're arrogant jerks, basically, like, you know, a little bit of the Dunning-Kruger effect. They think they're smarter or more talented than they really are. So we're not talking about them. We're not talking about the person who needs to be the smartest guy in the room. But what about these other people who are just genuine, like they're genuinely humble. They, you know, but they don't experience imposter syndrome. And the only difference, we call them humble realists. And the only difference between a humble realist and someone who experiences imposter syndrome is that, in the same situation where I might choose or feel like an imposter, a humble realist recognize they don't have that same experience. They recognize that their skills and their talents, you know, they take a healthy pride in their achievements, but they also have a healthy understanding of their limitations, which also brings it back to how do you parent your kids? So if you can parent your kids and raise them as humble realists, let's hope that some of, you know, that takes one of the sources away from them having an imposter syndrome later in life.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Good tip. Well,
thanks, Sue, for sharing that. I love that. I'm just thinking, I'm looking at the time here. There's so many other questions I could have, but maybe Carolyn, you can talk more about the program, Imposter Syndrome Institute. Been at the two levels. The first one, I think I was the second cohort. And then I came in. Yeah. Yep. Tell us more. Well, everyone's listening.
Yeah. Well, this is really for the coaches who are listening or those of you who have a coach and you want your coach to help you through this. So we have a program that we run twice a year called the Imposter Syndrome Informed Coach. And really, this is just putting coaches in a position to elevate their game because there is so much information. Like if someone tells you it's your superpower, but it just motivates you to work harder, but you're already working hard. Is that really the best advice? Like, you know, there are a lot of things coaches can do to extend someone's imposter experience rather than get rid of it. And so we are really out to help elevate the conversation and give coaches more confidence around the topic and really understand the nuances of this very multifaceted situation. And so we run a 4-week training that really puts you in a position of learning a framework So once you recognize it, or once your client brings it to you, here's a framework for how you can have the conversation without saying, Nadine, you've got imposter syndrome. Here's what you need to do. Or giving you a pep talk, you know, and saying, it's okay. You're really smart. Think of all the things you've done. That does not move the needle. So we provide the framework so that you know how to have the conversation, and then a toolkit with incredibly practical, easy to use tools. And, you know, Brittany, you can speak firsthand of that. I was just going to say,
I just used some of the tools recently and I love it. It's just kind of, as a coach, you're so nervous as it is to be a coach, because you just want your clients to succeed greatly. And so having those tools next to you just helps you feel a little bit more confident. And it really helps you elevate your service as well. So I can't recommend Imposter Syndrome Institute highly enough. I think I tell Nadine all the time how much I enjoyed the program, both of them, not just one, but both of them. I feel like I definitely learned so much more at your guys' program than the ones that I've been at to prior. So like, that's why I always recommend everybody to go experience it, because it helps you not just feel confident as a coach, but you have all these different tools and you get to meet all the great people. I love the collaboration piece of working with other coaches too around the world and having that kind of one-on-one experience with them, and you learn from them. It's just great. I can't say enough great things.
Yeah. We're really proud of the program, and we have gotten just the most amazing feedback from coaches who are like, mm-hmm. I have taken so many other programs about imposter syndrome, but they feed into the kind of the mistakes instead of real, you know, tangible solutions. So, So, I mean, I think we've got a link scrolling through here for your listeners. If they go to impostersyndrome.com/BNBD, what is it? Breaking Norms, Building Dreams. Then you can get on a wait list for when we announce it and save some money. Thanks to Brittany.
Yeah. I put it in the chat for everybody in the comments, and then it's just scrolling through right now. If anyone's watching on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, put that in the URL and you'll get directed right to where you need to be. Is there any last, I'm just looking at the time because we're almost at one. It's always exciting when it's already like, we're having so much fun here, and then it's 1 o'clock almost here. Time is flying by. Any final thoughts, Nadine?
Oh, well, I loved our conversation. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening into the very end as well. Just check out the resources, everything that's going at the bottom of the screen there. Can't wait to dive in as well. Carolyn, it's been wonderful meeting you and learning so much from you as well. There's been a wonderful conversation, and everyone who's listening in and can just somewhat identify with what's going on is, I hope there's been an insightful conversation, and hopefully you can use the knowledge that we shared and the examples and tips to move the needle a bit for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in the show. Thank you, Nadine and Carolyn, for coming in. Everybody in the chat room, and a big thank you to the United Public Radio Network and the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. And next week we welcome Jane, and we're talking about feminine power, motherhood, pleasure, and self-worth. So with that, until next week, remember, your journey is unique and your worth is unquestionable. Thank you, everybody.